Well, thanks for inviting me. I arrived yesterday, so I hope I'm coherent with everybody after 24 hours. I work in an engineering faculty, and as a result, although I'm a soil scientist, I have to adapt my ideas to different situations, and the university where I am has a lot of consultancy, so some of this deals with areas that require soil, manufactured soils or different soils. But what I've actually done is just given an overview of various situations and then one where an actual soil restoration has occurred. So what we've got to think about is that there's a development of land use over all sorts of areas, going from pristine to contaminated sites. And those are areas that you have to deal with in various ways. So during the planning stage, you actually have to think about what's going to happen to the land that you're actually developing. And in some cases, this is not necessarily determined by the soil type. It's just determined by selling situations. For example, are you going to have a recreation facility, a golf course or something like that in the area, regardless of what the soil is, regardless of what the terrain is, somebody fix it up because we're going to sell it and we're going to make money out of it. So really, you've got to think of soil conditions as a design or engineered profiles, and they're going to have to be a fit for purpose. So in some cases, you might have for example, a golf course, but in other cases, you might have, for example, a race course, depending on this particular area that is actually being restored. So it's highly specialised knowledge. Now, in the case of race courses, there's really specific properties, drainage, once again, moisture content, and binding strength. It's really important because also you've got to get flora and fauna going. But one of the things that you do have to think about is that you have to have an innate resistance in your soil situation, because it has to have a special binding strength, and it needs to have, like a golf course, it has to have a special sand particle size and shape. But the drainage especially is important, because it costs a lot of money if you've got a race course whereby it's going to be underwater. Or, on the other hand, if you've got a horse that runs on a soft track, you're doing all right. But if you've got them who only run on a hard track, then you've got a problem. And there's also problems with people having failures on the track, people being killed, horses being affected. So there has been a track surface innovation called Polytrack, which consists of sand and synthetic fibres and recycled rubber coated and wax. And this is relatively new, and the aim is to stabilise the situation, the suitability and the safety of the track for the jockeys and for the horses. But even so, there are other ways that there are other physical additives that are provided, sometimes just to the natural conditions, and these include fly ash and zeolite, because they've got high water holding capacities. So that's a manufactured sort of race track area. One of the things is you assume that the performance of the manufactured custom made track is better than the natural soils. And in some cases this may be true, and in other cases that's not necessarily the case. So you have a client who has very diverse expectations of you, the person who wants the racetrack and the person who may well want a golf course. And so it's really, really important to develop these ideas and know exactly what you're coming up against. And to do that, really, you need a soil scientist. It's very hard to explain to engineers that you need a soil scientist, but in all honesty, you do. So you really need soil survey information, someone to go out and have a look at what is actually at the site, And you may need drilling and drainage, but you may just need a whole lot of information to help you decide how you're going to work this particular site. So not to go into all of these, but these are things that have to be considered, the soil physical properties. And in many cases, if you've got a geotechnical engineer, he's not going to consider all of those cases. You need a geotechnical engineer and a soil scientist as well working together. And that's one of the things that I suppose I've been doing for the last 15 years, but I can say it's been a hard slog in some cases. Nevertheless, I'm still standing, so there we are. Okay, and then of course you've got to think of soil properties for chemistry, and these are just a couple of examples of course of how plants perform poorly in acidic conditions or alkaline conditions or saline conditions or contaminated sites. In Australia, plants behave very poorly in high phosphorus and nitrogen soils. We are the exact opposite, I think, to the rest of the world. You put phosphorus and nitrogen in the soil and the plants fall over. Don't like it. So, if we think of the moisture content and the bulk density and the effects, if we're thinking of, for example, a playing field is going to have quite a different strength of soil to a garden soil. And if you're thinking of plasticity, depending on your clay type and amount, landscaping and cricket pitches. Now, you probably don't even know what cricket is. It's a game that Australians play all summer and think forever. But one of the things about cricket is it's a bit like baseball. You get a ball coming and someone hurling it at you at speed. Not hurling, it has to be bowled, it can't be hurled. And when you hit it, it goes off and they have boundaries and all this sort of stuff. But one of the most important things about a cricket pitch is that it has to be hard and it has to crack. Whereas you don't want that to happen for your playing fields. And the reason it has to crack is that when the ball hits, it spins and takes out the batsman. And that's extremely important. And we have the hardest, quickest pitches in the whole world. So there you are. So if you've learnt nothing else, you've learnt that about us. And that is extremely important. Most of the time, they are not manufactured, but they could be have additives to them. It just depends. And of course, then you actually have to establish vegetation, because around areas, without the vegetation, then you lose your biodiversity. So your soil surveys also have to include ecological surveys and keeping of endangered species, so that you've got your biodiversity and your various types of trees that go in to make your linkages with other parks. Now, there's been quite a lot said about this, so I don't want to go into this, because I was going to talk about very briefly about putting greens and things, but that the first speaker spoke about that, so I think I'll just go on to the first case study. This case study just deals with a golf course for a planned residential development. Now, you can see the type of soil here. It's not terrific, but it's a sandstone-based soil, and this is only a very brand new golf course with trees around it, of course. A lot of the sand was actually developed from the site, because it's from sandstone, and this sandstone we have in Sydney, Hawkesbury sandstone, is extremely good sandstone, and broken down works very well. So this particular golf course is in the middle of a residential area, part of a development site, as I said, and it also has, besides the golf course, it has other sporting facilities, so you have golf courses and sporting facilities available to you, but originally it was agricultural land. So that's been taken away. It was marginal agricultural land, but it's now been developed into these housing developments and various recreational facilities. Now, this is a different type of soil altogether. In fact, it's not a soil at all. But it's a vertical garden wall, Central Park, which is just across from my office in Sydney. And it is a man-made soil altogether. It was done by a French landscape architect who worked in other places in the world. But the man-made soil is made up firstly of felt. This felt was just used for the roots of the plants. And then the rest of it was made up of recycled nylon clothes, so that you had a medium of two layers, approximately 2 metres thick. Now, as a result of that, this is supposed to maintain this garden for many. This is only a small section of it. It's a huge garden, vertical wall garden, which is onto a major road, so you have all the contaminations that could possibly come from that. And this is the information that you'll be able to read, but I didn't want to take time reading all this to you. But it's supposed to have no maintenance for many years. And in France, it's been developed over time, and they haven't had to change actually the soil for about 15 years. So it's an interesting sort of situation. Whether that will be the same in Sydney, I don't know, because this has only been going for about the vertical wall's only been going for about three or four years. But the plants are in profusion, so one could have to say that at present it is a very successful situation. So this is different from starting off with the soil itself. This is man-made completely. Now, I don't expect you to read all this, but this is a restoration area that is a former industrial site which is adjacent to Sydney Harbour. The name of it is Barangaroo. What else would you expect from Australia? Something like that. But it's Barangaroo. Barangaroo was a person who was a female, and this was developed. The site was developed over a long period of time and eventually became quite polluted. It was asked then that this site be rejuvenated into an area for people to use, for turf area, people to sit, and also in trees. And to do that, the whole thing worked on the situation that how much compost and fertiliser did you really need for the A horizon of the topsoil? And the research showed that eventually the sandstone flora only needed 60 to 80 millimetres per kilogram in the topsoil and only 25 milligrams of phosphorus in the subsoil, so that you needed only approximately a volume of green compost of about 10% to achieve this, and the pH was 4 to 4.5. So pot trials were done for the flora, composted by volume, and so it was decided that the heath that could be grown only needed 5% of compost, the eucalypt trees only needed 10%, and the fig trees and the turf 20% with slow, very, very slow release nitrogen. And so there was the sand was come from the sandstone, and it was 100% recycled garden waste and green waste, which was going to be used for the compost. And this is the soil profile. This soil profile, you can see, has wood mulch, crushed sandstone and washed sand and compost, crushed sandstone and washed sand, and in the A2, and also the same for the B2 and compacted fill. This had to be totally, the whole of the site had to be totally manufactured. None of this was on site, except that they used the sandstone, some of the sandstone that was crushed from the sandstone area. Around about, but he ran out of sandstone, the person who did it, and had to go around trying to find other places, and he used actually glass sand as part of the situation. So the contamination was completely removed. This profile was developed. And these were the trees that were planted. And the trees that were planted had to be the trees that were there in the first place. So the vegetation had to look like the headland that eventually was during Barangaroo's time, who was an Aboriginal woman who lived in the area. So these trees, as I said, you had eucalypts, you had casuarinas, for example, and you can see the other various types of trees there as well. Your palm trees, for example, which were all native to the area. And the site was a very, very large site. And that's the site when you look at it. Now, all that area there, which is planted, plus the turf, was all brought in as a result of the soil profile that was developed by the soil scientists for this. And it has now been opened. It's only been opened in the last year with its pathways, etc. But it really is quite a successful venture. And as I said, all on a profile which is totally developed. So the conclusions are that the properties and performance of manufactured soils change over time, depending on where you're actually working. But as mentioned by the last two speakers, you really have to maintain and renovate the areas that you work in as part of your planning process. So this particular one, the last profile case study that I showed you, was one that does have to be maintained. When the first plants were put in, my colleague lost about 10% only of the plants, of all those plants. And funnily enough, they were casuarinas that generally like salt and it's right on the sea. So for some reason, something that grows really, really well didn't grow so well. So thanks very much. Sorry, I have no idea how much it cost. It would have cost the state government quite a lot, I'd say. But there was a lot of money put into it because the site itself was an eyesore and it had to be done. And it's actually been reconstructed back to the original landscape of what it actually looked like, because they have the sea levels of what it actually looked like. So it was a headland. It's a headland soil, so you've got heath and you've got large trees, etc., etc. But I've no idea. But I'm sure if you look up Barangaroo, it'll be there. The government will tell you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.